It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back to throw. They pick up the blitz. Throws one left down the sideline into the end zone. Touchdown! Hakeem Nicks! Nick takes the snap again. Pumps. He's going to get sacked by Tuck. Fumbles the football. Giants have it at the 26-yard line. Draw right for Bradshaw. Cuts at the one. Goes into the end zone. Touchdown. Nice run by Bradshaw to run it in for 4 yards out. Manning will throw on first and 10. Heaves one deep down the left side for Manningham, who makes the catch. Gallops out of a tackle to the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by Andrew Mark right here on Giants.com. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you. Championship weekend is upon us. You probably get the best two games of the year, at least what fans hope are the best two games of the year, coming your way late Sunday afternoon, early evening. Remember, it's not your typical 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock start on Sunday, so you'll have to be up a little bit later. You can try to plan your dinner right in between those two games. It's always a fun Sunday heading in to the Super Bowl. Now, of course, the irony here is that three out of the four teams in this week's championship games were in the championship games last year. The only team that is not happens to be your New York Football Giants. So our question of the day is, what do the Giants need to do in the offseason so they are back playing on championship weekend next year? Lance, good morning.
How we doing, John?
We're doing all right. How about yourself?
Hanging in there, doing well. Looking forward to today's show.
Very good, very good.
As well as championship weekend, as you just touched on.
By the way, Bob Glauber will be joining us at 10 o'clock from Newsday. He will be talking with us about the games this weekend, Giants offseason moves, and, of course, some of the coaching changes going around the NFL. Chip Kelly was introduced as head coach of the Eagles yesterday. He had his introductory press conference, and one of the things he talked about, and this is something that we mentioned the other day as well, the concept of the quarterback running in his offense is useful, but it's not necessarily the end-all, be-all. And he seemed to indicate that Nick Foles, Michael Vick perhaps still in the mix as well, will all be potential quarterbacks next year. And he doesn't necessarily need a Colin Kaepernick-type quarterback that likes to run the football, or a Robert Griffin III type, or even a Russell Wilson who can run it, but more of a thrower, to run his offense the way he wants to run it.
But at least want somebody that has that mobility factor so that he can try to implement the same system that he used at Oregon.
Drew Bledsoe need not apply.
Yes, I do not think that he stands a very strong chance of being under center for the Eagles. And you're right, he did make the point that under his system at Oregon, you know, it's not just all about the quarterback running each and every play. He likes to utilize his running backs. That's why I think LeSean McCoy is a perfect fit for this system, as well as Bryce Brown. Michael Vick, obviously, is guaranteed about $3 million next season, so the Eagles will have to determine whether or not that fits into their financial plans. And then you have the young quarterback in Nick Foles, who hasn't necessarily run a read option offense. But, you know, with a full offseason, they hired a coach nice and early. You know, Kelly can slowly groom whichever quarterback he wants to turn to. And it'll be interesting to see what they decide to go with over the next couple of months. And that will really determine what the Giants are going to do from a defensive perspective, John. Because as we talked about yesterday, it's hard to really assess the Eagles situation right now until you know who's running this offense.
Well, and it's so important to win games in the division. It's funny, I was just talking to somebody upstairs earlier, and if you look at the NFC East, the Giants finished in second place in the division at 9-7. The Dallas Cowboys are at 8-8. Both those teams are 3-3 in the division. The Redskins finished in first place. They were 5-1 in the division. So the division was more or less decided based upon who won their division games.
And the Giants didn't do very well in that.
No question. The Giants were only 3-3. They split with all three teams, and the Redskins went 5-1, and that's why they were able to win the NFC East. And you're seeing the spectrum of these teams in the NFC East change a little bit with Chip Kelly going to Philadelphia. Robert Griffin III is expected to make a full recovery by training camp in the regular season. He should be back next year. And then the Cowboys return Jason Garrett. At least it looks like it for the time being. There are some rumblings that might not be the case moving forward. We'll keep an eye on that as the weeks go forward. But it's going to be a very difficult division for the Giants defense to really contain these guys. And when you look at the season, Lance, the Giants defense really was a big part of this problem. They got takeaways. When they got takeaways, they were good. And quite frankly, when they didn't get takeaways, the defense struggled. And if you look at it this way, when the Giants didn't get a lot of takeaways, they didn't score a lot of points either. When they didn't get that great field position off those takeaways, the offense struggled taking the ball 70, 80 yards down the field.
Oh, one of the things that was so notable throughout this season is the fact that they struggled at times to put together 70 to 80 yard drives consistently. Yeah. The Saints game, for example, they put 52 points on the board. Well, why did they have so much success, John? Because David Wilson had one great return after another. The defense had four turnovers. If you start at midfield or even closer to your own end zone, you know, you're going to increase your chances of getting in and executing. And that was the case in that contest. Other games where the favorable field position wasn't at the forefront, you know, it was a struggle to get 50 to 60 yards consistently. And you can't play that way and expect to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, the Giants had the best field position in football off of kickoffs. And that had a lot to do with David Wilson. And that's something the Giants are going to have to figure out next year on both sides of the ball. Can the offense sustain those long drives? And, you know, obviously Akeem Nicks coming back healthy will help that a whole lot. And on defense, can they get teams to go three and out more? Can they get stops if they don't make the turnover? It's very hard to get turnovers in this league. And a lot of times, they are self-inflicted by the opposing team. If you can't get those turnovers and you need to get traditional stops, whether it's stopping the run, deflecting passes, playing good, fundamental, solid defense, can the Giants get those types of stops next year? This year, they struggled getting them.
Well, they're going to have to do it with the run first, John, as you just touched on. You want to put your opponents in third and longs. And I don't think the Giants did that consistently because teams said to themselves, every running back this season has had a field day against the Giants defense. And it's a copycat league. You hear it a lot. So when DeMarco Murray had the big game in week one, then you knew the Browns and the Bucks, the upcoming opponents, were going to follow the same script. And they did, because we saw the Martins and the Richardsons of the world also thrive on the ground. So to me, priority number one this offseason is to adjust the scheme so that the Giants can consistently prevent running backs from having strong games, or else next season it's going to be one easy third down after another. And then you're right, if the turnovers are not there, the secondary is going to have its backs against the wall. Can they make consistent stops? Right now, I don't know if many people are confident that the Giants defense, as is currently, can do that.
And then that'll put the Giants pass rush in a better spot to rush the quarterback if teams are in third and long. And then your third down defense is going to get better. The Giants' third down defense this year was poor. Quite frankly, their third down offense wasn't very good either. They had trouble, especially in fourth quarters of games, getting first downs and third down situations. And that's something, another thing that's going to have to change. Now, it's hard to really pinpoint things you can do to fix these things, but it is a laundry list of things you can get better at. Now, were the Giants good at a lot of things this year? Sure they were. You mentioned the field position, the kickoff returns. They did an excellent job. Their red zone defense was actually pretty darn good this year. The red zone offense, despite struggling, only got better as the season went along. The running game this year was a lot better than it was last season. Believe it or not, quarterback hits and sacks allowed were better this year than they were last year. So the Giants did do a lot of things better this season, but unfortunately the negatives at times outweigh the positives.
Yeah, and then I get back to the defensive side of things. If your defense is not making stops, you know, regardless of how consistent or well your offense is played, you're putting so much pressure on Eli Manning and company, John, that at some point it's going to wind up coming back to haunt them.
And again, Eli just simply, we went through these stats the other day. I'll go through them again if the callers want me to. Eli just didn't play as well in the fourth quarter. His numbers are way down. Percentage, touchdowns, yards, you name it. All those numbers are way down. And time of possession was down too. And that has a lot to do with the defense not being able to get off the field too. The Giants' time of possession struggled all year, especially in fourth quarters.
Yeah. Opposing offense has really wore down this Giants defense. And sometimes the best way to beat the Giants, John, is to keep Eli Manning on the sideline.
Good plan.
Don't give him a lot of time in the fourth quarter.
That is
to
the anti-Lennon Maryland plan right there.
Yes, absolutely. Len calls for Eli Manning to be on the field. He's on the field, the Giants always have a good chance to win.
When he's not, you have some trouble. Let's go to our calls, 201-939-4513. You can also send in your questions on Twitter, the hashtag Giants Chat. Make sure you do that as well. Let's start with our good buddy down in the nation's capital, Steve, down in D.C. What's up, Steve-O?
What's happening, fellas?
What's up, bro?
Hey, Steve.
Listen, I wanted to make the first important point I wanted to make is, you know, every time I see David Wilson return a kick, of course I'm ecstatic, but I can never stop thinking about, you know, the way we used Tiki back in 2000, and I really felt like it took away from his effectiveness during the game. Not only did it fatigue him, but I just felt like, you know, he was a good chance he could get injured. And I you know, as much as I like those big returns, I'm just wondering, you know, now that we're going to be using Wilson hopefully a lot more next year, if we'll look to somebody else to return those kicks. I just don't really like the idea of having him return kicks and then, you know, and then being one of our main threats in the backfield. So, that's, you know, that's one thing. I just wanted to know what you guys thought about that. And also I'd like to say, I mean, you know, I always say about the time of possession, I think it kind of falls on the offense, you know, just the way we do these quick, you know, passes and we're out. I just really don't feel like we, you know, the offense wants to be on the field. We don't move methodically, and that's really affected our time of possession. So as far as the defense, it, to me, it's really hard to grade the defense. I mean, there's some things, obvious things we could point out, and really the only thing real consistent to me has been Linval Joseph. But I just, you know, as far as the field, you know, field position and time of possession, I think, to, you know, I look more to the offense to blame it than anything, and I'd like to see us use our weapons effectively, and particularly, you know, David Wilson. I want to know what you guys think about possibly looking at somebody else to return kicks next year.
Well, I think that ever since Dominic Hixon got hurt, Steve, they've been really looking for somebody to provide a spark on special teams. And I know Hixon is back in the picture, but David Wilson really answered the call. So I don't think the Giants are saying to themselves, well, we found the answer, and now we want to take a step back and limit him. I think the best way to counter that and prevent him from getting tired and worn down, as you were just alluding to and concerned about, is bringing in two other running backs or working in a scheme where you have a three-headed monster so that you don't have to have Wilson have 20 to 25 carries. If they decide to keep Ahmad Bradshaw, if Andre Brown is fully healthy, I think they can find a very nice balance, Steve, between all three of those running backs so that Wilson can continue to contribute on special teams and also have anywhere from 10 to 15 carries. I think they have the personnel right now on paper. It's just a matter of can the numbers mix in well. Right now, I don't think the Giants' best option is to take David Wilson off of the returns because I don't know if you have another explosive player that is going to give you that type of production game in and game out. And clearly that was huge for the Giants' offense because if they don't have that favorable field position, who knows where the offense ends up ranking this season.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with you. I mean, I just, you know, it's been a while since we used multiple running backs. I'd definitely like to see that. You know, of course, I want to see Brown, and I'd like to see Ahmad stand around. I mean, stay around, too. I just don't, like you said, it's just all about the salary cap, because I know we definitely have some other issues to address, linebacker in particular. So, you know, but yeah, guys, well, I definitely appreciate the feedback, and you know I enjoy the show. So I'll listen up there. Thanks a lot for taking my call, guys.
You got it, Steven. Thanks so much for weighing in. And financial issues is certainly going to play a role in terms of who they can keep and who they can bring back. Ahmad Bradshaw is under contract. Andre Brown, a restricted free agent. So the Giants are going to have to assess their backfield, determine where they want to go. David Wilson, certainly long-term, is clearly in the game plan moving forward.
Leave him on kickoffs. He's so good there. You have to keep him in that position. He's a potential big play every time. I don't think you can remove David Wilson from kickoff duty. He's just that good at it. I don't think you can afford it. And you're right. If you want to then preserve him a little bit and give him a break at running back, that's fine. Bring back Bradshaw and Andre Brown. Keep both guys in the mix. Limit David Wilson's touches on offense if he seems to show some fatigue. And if he doesn't, then you use him in both spots.
You know, this was sort of an experimental year. And I don't know maybe if most Giants fans agree with that. But the reason I say that, they were getting basically an opportunity to see what David Wilson brings to the table and how he plays off of Ahmad Bradshaw and Andre Brown. Then, unfortunately, Brown gets hurt, so now you're down to Wilson and Bradshaw. Bradshaw gets hurt, and then all of a sudden the depth chart disappears and you just have to ride Wilson. In a perfect world, I think if the Giants get back to that three-player alignment, I think that will preserve everybody. Because remember, the concern is not just about keeping David Wilson fresh. The concern is also about keeping Ahmad Bradshaw fresh and Andre Brown. All three of them have some type of injury concern.
That's why you need three of these days. And it's funny, you know, the joke 5 years ago was that this is no longer a running one running back league. It's a two running back league. Now you're getting to the point where in a lot of situations, you need three backs to carry the load, depending on who your running backs are, based on just the sheer amount of injuries a lot of these teams suffer over the course of the year. Look at perfect example. The Falcons use three running backs. You see Michael Turner, you see Snelling, you see Jacquez Rogers, three running backs. Look at the 49ers. You've seen three running backs over the course of the season. LaMichael James, Frank Gore, Kendall Hunter, and now with Hunter out, they use Anthony Dixon to spell Frank Gore a little bit. Even in New England, Danny Woodhead, Ridley, Vereen, three running backs. And the Ravens used two with Ray Rice and, of course, Bernard Pierce.
And Vontae Leach is involved a little bit as well, their fullback.
Mostly a fullback. Yeah. But, yeah, Dallas Cowboys, they used three running backs this year as well. The Redskins generally used two. The Eagles with McCoy and Bryce Brown used two. But this is a multiple running back league now. And those are the adjustments you have to make going forward.
And clearly there's a huge disparity between the teams on the outside of the playoff picture and the teams that are in. As you just mentioned, all four teams you could point to that are still in contention for a Super Bowl victory have
at least
three man backfield.
Three of them use three.
They're effective, and clearly it works.
201-939-4513. Our good buddy Vic in Connecticut. Vic, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
What's up?
Well, Vic, what you got?
Comments on some questions about how do they get back.
Yeah.
I guess my first answer is win more games.
Well, thanks.
That's
stating
the obvious.
Thanks, Copernicus. Appreciate it.
It's going to be the voice of conscience here. But I get nervous when I hear about David Wilson returning. Kickoffs, I think he's the man to do it. I just keep going back to Jason.
I was going to say, Seahorn has scarred Giants fans for life. No one's ever going to want to put a decent player, kickoff or punt now just because of Jason Seahorn.
Yeah, between him hurting his knee and then running after, I think it was a Baltimore Raven trying to pull his pants up in one of the games. That's all I remember of him. Him being a nice guy and sending a lot of autographs at camp, too. But to get back to the subject at hand, I think, you know, the number one thing they need to do, and you guys mentioned already, is win the division. 4-2 is minimum in division because it comes into play in terms of tiebreakers. At the end, it comes into play in terms of home field games. I think the Patriots are a perfect example in the division they play in. You know, they start off 6-0 every year because they beat the Jets and the Bills and Miami every year, it seems like.
Seems that way.
They look like they're 6-0 every year, which irritates me, but that's a subject for another day. I think we need to get a handle on Washington and their scheme. You know, not that RG3's going to dictate the way we draft and the way we scheme, but I think we need to make sure that we've got a plan to contain him the best we can. And then Philadelphia, the potential impact with Chip Kelly, who knows what it's going to be. We won't go there. But in the Cowboys, they're going to compete. So I think in order to do that, I think the three things that are really key for the Giants to do in the offseason, some of these you can draft and whatever, some of them you maybe need to teach. But one is I think they need speed on defense because when you're dealing against RG3 and a potential Philadelphia team and a Tony Romo, you need linebackers that can run. Romo gets out of the side of the pocket on the Giants all the time. The other thing is I think the Giants severely got killed this year on run after catch, yards after catch. I think the Bengals were the poster child of tackling the Giants and giving them 1 yard after the catch. But I think the Giants do a poor job at that.
Giants did not tackle well at any level of the defense all year long.
Yeah, and that run after the catch is just it's a killer when you've got them stopped on third down and he gets that extra 5 yards and your D's on the field again.
Very true.
And the last thing I think that you need, obviously, is I think you need to pay Beedy. I think you need to pay Booth, get that offensive line together. Because as Len and Marilyn would say, you know, time of possession is everything. Your offense is your best defense. If you got Wilson and you got, you know, the other two running backs and you can keep the other team off the field, you have a chance of A, scoring points, and also B, you know, keeping them from scoring points. So I think this is what they need to do. Now, tell me we can put that all together in a pot and stir it up and get it done. I'm not so sure, but that would be my plan.
All right, Vic, appreciate the call, my man.
All right, have a good weekend.
Thanks, Vic. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. And just talking about winning these games in the division, we talked about it earlier. Going through the teams that made the playoffs this year, Lance, every single team was minimum 3-3 in the division. The only two teams that were 3-3 in the division and made the playoffs were the Seahawks and the Cincinnati Bengals. Ravens, 4-2. Patriots, 6-0. Texans, 5-1. Colts 4-2, Broncos 6-0, Redskins 5-1, Packers 5-1, Vikings 4-2, Falcons 3-3, Seahawks 3-3, and then the 49ers went 3-2-1. So minimum 500 in your division to make the playoffs, and 4-2 will get you there. And there are teams that went 4-2 in their division, and well, let's see, were there any teams that went 4-2 in their division and did not make the playoffs? No one in the NFC went 4-2 in their division and did not make the playoffs. In the AFC, the San Diego Chargers, the only team to go 4-2 in their division and not make the playoffs. So if you go 4-2 in your division, you're in pretty darn good shape of going to the postseason.
And speaking of the AFC West, I think Oakland last season or two seasons ago went 6-0 in
the playoffs. That's when they squeaked into the playoffs. Yeah. I don't think that was under Hugh Jackson, was it?
Well, I'm looking. It wasn't 2011.
Was it under Tom Cable, maybe?
2010, they went 6-0.
They made the playoffs that year?
No, they missed it. They finished 500.
All right. I think that was Cable, right? Or was that Hugh Jackson?
No, Hugh Jackson was in after Cable, I think, in 2011. I think 2010 may have been Cable's final year.
I think it was, too. And that's why they were thinking about keeping him, but I guess they decided not to. 201-939-4513. Bob Glauber from Newsday joins us at 10. Let's try to get into two calls we have on the line before we get to him. Russell down in Fort Knox. What's going on, Russ?
Yeah, what's going on? The Giants this year defense was not good. They need to draft a defensive end, a linebacker, and a shutdown cornerback.
Well, you can't get all three of those.
Yeah, but you can draft a defensive end. The first round pick, the 19th pick, should be a defensive. We got to get a defensive end.
Okay, that's fair, Russell. If you want to draft a defensive end in the first round, I'm okay with that. But then you're not getting a shutdown corner if you're not picking them in round number one. You know what I'm saying?
But what I'm saying though, we can't draft one. We got to sign one. They got to sign one because they lost Ross last year. If you look at when they won the Super Bowl last year, they had Ross. They had another cornerback. This year they let Prince run the show, but he's not guaranteed. He's always getting injured. Every year he gets injured. And you got another backup cornerback that's off the bench that doesn't play good. And that's the reason why. Look at the Baltimore game. Smith destroyed Corey Webster. But you got to understand, he had no more cornerbacks to throw out there. We need a cornerback like tomorrow. We need somebody to shut down. I don't know if we get Michael Jenkins from the Cowboys or somebody. Just get somebody that can help, you know what I'm saying, help out the cornerbacks. Because Terrell Thomas gets hurt every year. So we really have no corners for the last 2 years.
You know, I hear you, and I think the Giants definitely need more depth at the cornerback positions. I wouldn't qualify Mike Jenkins in that shutdown corner category by any means. I think he was the Cowboys' fourth cornerback this year behind Carr, Claiborne, and Scandrick. But, yes, I agree. The Giants need more depth there. Once you got past Corey Webster and you got past Prince and Mukamura, you have Hosley there who did a decent job in the slot but still needs a lot of work. He struggled at times. You do need a little bit more depth. I don't mind drafting a corner later on in the draft or bringing in somebody in free agency. I'm just honestly not sure, Russ, they have the type of salary cap flexibility to bring in the type of player you want to bring at corner with the money they're already paying Corey Webster, with the first-round draft pick going to Prince, and Hosley being a third-round pick last year. That's a lot of resources dedicated to just one position. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Unless we get – hopefully we get the kid from Mississippi State, Banks, we'll have to take him with a 19th pick. But regardless, we need a cornerback or a defensive end because OC's gone. We need somebody young, fresh, that can pass you. That was the reason why RG3, he wasn't going Pierre Paul's side. He was going the OC side that whole time, and he was killing OC. So we need something – when he does that, because everybody's going to play a spread option next year. Now we got to be ready for it because everybody, Chip Kelly is going to play. He's going to run with his quarterback, so we got to be ready for that. And we got to shut down corner. He can't pass, you know what I'm saying? The cornerback can't pass the ball, so we got to step up on defense. Our defense was lousy.
All right, appreciate the call, Russ. Thanks a lot.
And, Russ, also keep in mind and appreciate the phone call as well, the fact that they had a lot of corners heading into training camp, remember?
Injuries everywhere.
And it was one injury after another, John. So perhaps the Giants' depth chart is in a different position right now.
Witherspoon. Who else am I missing in that group? Terrell Thomas, I said him.
You mentioned Thomas.
There's one other guy.
Big loss, clearly.
There's one other guy that I'm missing, and I can't think of him.
Well, they had Michael Coe, and he left.
Injury, that was a good one, too. So there you go. A lot of guys they had at corner, and they just didn't work out.
So it wasn't as if the Giants didn't do their due diligence in beefing up the depth chart and having other options, but when five guys get hurt – or you have to make transactions to cut down the roster. Now, all of a sudden, you clearly don't have as many players that you thought you were going to turn to when you had training camp start, and that's why you're left with Hosley, Amukamara, and Tryon. Giants didn't necessarily plan to be in that position. Unfortunately, injuries did not cooperate.
Bob Glauber in a couple minutes, but we'll try to squeeze him in before Bob gets on the air. Let's go to Len in Maryland. Len, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up, pal?
Doing, Len?
Hey, I want to try to add something to that field position thing. Well, the good news is, good field position certainly helps. You still have to score. And the Giants did that. I mean, they may have gotten good field position, but they drove the ball. Now, maybe too many field goals, You know, we look at, you know, red zone offense, maybe too many field goals, but we did score a lot of points, and I think the field position, again, did help. What, you know, what I'd like to know is what their, the average length of a drive that the Giants had after they took possession. Let's assume, you know, 175 possessions during the season. That's approximately 10 a game, maybe more than 10 a game, 11 a game. How long was the drive after they took possession? We may need to get Michael Eisen on this. I don't know the answer, but my suspicion is that the Giants drove the ball for longer yardage than more than half the team, more than three quarters of the teams. Again, it's a perception on my part. We'd have to check this out, but I think they were driving the ball pretty well, and certainly an indication of that is how many points they scored. Again, maybe too many field goals, but we were scoring after we got that great field position, and I think we just got to put Wilson back there because he gives us that opportunity to get that kind of field position and to score points from back in that position. If I had my wish, and of course there's 31 other teams and the fans of 31 other teams that want the same thing, boy, a three down outside linebacker who can rush the passer. If we could get somebody like that on our defense, I think it's going to turn things around. You know, I saw an interesting tidbit this morning by Gil Brandt, the former general manager of the Cowboys in the Cowboys' early days. And he said there's less emphasis on middle linebackers today in the pros than ever before. In fact, he said, I just can't believe this, but, I mean, why would he lie? He figured this out, that in the last 10 years, only four middle linebackers have been drafted in the first round.
Yeah, there are. One
of them is Patrick Wilson. One of them is Patrick Willis out in San Francisco.
Keekly's another guy.
Middle linebacker. I'm sorry?
Keekly's another guy that got picked last year. He's not being used a middle linebacker necessarily, but he was drafted as a middle linebacker.
Yeah. But, you know, it just seems to be a de-emphasis, according to Brandt.
Right.
That teams are de-emphasizing that middle linebacker position. Obviously, you got to have 11 guys on the field, so somebody's got to play the position.
Right.
But it's not quite as important as that outside linebacker position and as shutdown corners, as the previous caller talked about.
Well, Len, I also think it has to do with the 3-4 defenses that some teams run, and there really isn't a typical
more
middle
teams,
linebacker.
There you go. More and more teams are running a 3-4. Probably more than half the teams run 3-4 defenses.
I'd say it's about a 50-50 proposition. I have to look at it, you know, deeper, but more teams are running that 3-4 defense, and mostly because it's a lot easier to find that outside linebacker that can rush the passer and the 3-4 than getting a traditional 4-3 defensive end that can stop the run and rush the passer.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Of course, that 3-4 is designed primarily to stop the run, and as you guys have been saying, you know, for the last 2 years, that's the key. You stop the run. Things change dramatically. Hey, listen, thanks for the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to listening to Glauber. And you guys have a great weekend.
Thanks,
right, Len.
You too. I appreciate it. And Len with the perfect segue. We now welcome in Bob Glauber from Newsday, covering everything around the NFL. We'll talk some championship game stuff, coaches around the league. But first, Bob, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule coaching Indiana basketball to join us this morning.
Thanks. I took a little time out, John, from practice, and all set to go. I'm yours.
Very good. By the way, for the joke, by the way, if you take a look at Bob, him and Tom Cream are basically doppelgangers, just for the record. Anyway, John Schmelk, Lance Melda here. We're joined by Bob Glauber. Bob, you're up in New England. Obviously, this is not a unique situation for the Patriots to be in, playing in the AFC Championship game. What's your feel being around the team this week, talking to Belichick, talking to Brady, and everybody up there in New England?
You know, the thing, John, with the Patriots is the feel is always the same. The feel is, you know, we're going to work hard, we're going to try to win the game, we're going to lay low, and we're going to just, you know, do our best. And that is the Belichick mantra for as long as I've known him, and I go back to 1985 with the guy when he was, diagramming plays on my notebook as the, you know, unknown Giants defensive coordinator. You know, it's been a special, you know, kind of treat to watch him grow as a coach and just watch him develop. And I'm telling you, this team is just about work. And it's about humility, and it's about preparation. So it's a little bit of a dull storyline, but, you know,
it works.
Hard to argue with 12 years of just you know, dominance in certainly in the AFC and in large part the NFL.
Bob, last week the Ravens really showed that they could embarrass that Broncos defense with Joe Flacco's long ball, and I'm assuming they're going to try to utilize that same strategy against this New England defense. How much of a concern is it for Belichick and company to have trouble containing Joe Flacco's deep ball, especially with Torrey Smith and Jacoby Jones out there in the secondary?
Yeah, it's absolutely a concern, John. That's probably the biggest concern defensively because, you know, Flacco, I think Flacco probably throws the nicest deep ball of any quarterback in the league, and I've seen it from his rookie year on. He's just got that great. He's able to put air into the ball, and just when that pass is on the mark, it is just perfect. And he's been doing it now better, and really he's at his best right now. So that is absolutely the key component there that the you know Patriots have to worry about. I will say though that the trade for Aqib Talib really did a lot for that secondary. Now, before he got there, they were giving up regularly. I think they gave up 7 plays of 40 or more yards in the first 10 games, and they've given up 1 since Talib got there.
Wow.
And part of that is that Devin McCourty has switched from cornerback to safety. It's more, it really his more natural position, the former Rutgers cornerback at first-round pick. Yeah, he struggled in coverage at cornerback. He's much better as a safety, knows how to read the field. So I would suspect, John, that they won't run into the same problem that the Broncos did on that last you know, play in regulation of the Ravens that you know went for 70 yards when Jacoby Jones got past a stunned secondary that should have been behind him the whole way.
Obviously, you never want to lose a guy like Rob Gronkowski, Bob, but it seems like the Patriots are in as good of a situation as they can be, losing a guy of his caliber, considering they played without him for basically half a season. They have a guy like Aaron Hernandez to step in for him. How much is that loss of Gronkowski going to affect this team playing against a Ravens defense, which, while they have injuries, they are still very well coached and they have a very good scheme?
Well, listen, you know, I think they're a lot better off with Gronkowski, and it's hard to minimize his presence because he's just such a big target. There isn't a tight end. You know, Jimmy Graham of the Saints is probably the only one who's really like him. Tony Gonzalez is a more, you know, prototypical guy in terms of size and speed for a tight end. And he is, you know, the greatest of all time. But Gronk, he's a unique player because he's got speed, he's a big target, and he's a great, great red zone weapon. So, you know, they get by without him because of Tom Brady, but, you know, I think they struggle a little bit. Now, Hernandez is a good target. You know, he is more of the prototype, you know, very fluid guy, good receiver, and Welker is obviously a great, great weapon, you know, especially across the middle and especially on third down. But, you know, just to say that they're going to be fine without Gronkowski, you know, I think they're going to struggle a little bit without him. And I think Brady's numbers were diminished when Gronkowski was out with the broken arm during the regular season. So, you know, they'll make up for it, but I just don't think it's going to be as easy as people think.
Lance Meadow, John Schmelk here on Big Blue Kickoff. We're joined by Bob Glauber of Newsday, covers the NFL from a national perspective, talking the AFC and NFC championship games. And Bob, the Patriots have done a really nice job, and we were talking about this earlier in the show, utilizing 3 running backs. Danny Woodhead is banged up, but they still have Ridley, they still have Vereen. Why has this team been so effective in just plugging one running back in and out of the lineup and still putting up consistent numbers?
You know, it's a good question because Belichick is just not a guy who is held hostage to the typical, you know, dominant type running back. He's had him. You know, he had Corey Dillon, and they won a Super Bowl with him, and he rode Corey Dillon, you know, quite, you know, often as far as giving him the ball. But just the scheme there, and Josh McDaniels is terrific at it. You know, you got to give him that. Maybe not as a head coach, but as an offensive coordinator, he's done a really good job of plugging those guys in. And Vereen is the guy who has really come in. You know, Ridley has had plenty of experience, but Vereen is the guy who came in last week when Woodhead got hurt and really played an excellent role. I had a chance to talk to Vereen yesterday, and again, typical Patriots guy, very soft-spoken, isn't going to tell you much, but very prepared. Always watches film, and that's the thing with this Belichick team. It is always prepared. It's the smartest collective team in the game because of the way their coach works them and prepares them. And the thing that they stress is it's not a guy going in, you know, in place of an injured player. It's a position. They look at it as like, okay, next man up, this is the position you play. Don't worry about replacing you know, Gronkowski or Woodhead. Don't worry about trying to fill those shoes. Just play the position like we've taught you from the start of off-season conditioning program back in April.
You mentioned Josh McDaniels, and they had brought him back into the mix last playoffs. Now they have Brian Daboll, the former Chiefs offensive coordinator. What is his role going to be this weekend, and what was the thinking behind bringing him back into the mix?
Well, you know, Belichick is very unique in that respect that, you know, you don't often see it. I would say I think that's the first time I've ever seen it when a coach comes in like McDaniels did, you know, after being fired. Or a couple of years ago. And, you know, I think Belichick has plans for the when the guys know his offense, Daboll can be an advisory guy. He's another set of eyes, and that's how Josh McDaniels explained it, that he's another set of eyes to look at everything, give some ideas if he thinks something is not going right. He knows the Belichick system, having worked with him before, and he's a good, good football man. So, you know, I think Daboll, you know, they might anticipate losing a guy or two off the staff. As far as assistant coaches go, they don't know that just yet. But, you know, that's what happened with Josh McDaniels when Bill O'Brien left to go to Penn State, and Josh McDaniels steps right in as offensive coordinator.
All right, Bob, before we jump to the NFC, who do you like in this game, Patriots and Ravens?
John, I like the Patriots. I think the people are maybe expecting a little bit too much as far as an easy game. I guess Las Vegas would say, you know, at 9.5 points, that's,
yeah.
You know, that, expect them to win by 10. I think it's going to be a little bit of a closer game. That the Ravens have a little bit of, you know, mojo going. They've just kind of got that feeling, that it factor that a lot of, you know, championship teams have. I think they'll be able to keep it close. I do give New England the edge, but is it going to surprise me if, you know, Baltimore pulls off another upset? No, it won't. But I do like the Patriots narrowly going in.
All right, real quick on the NFC, Bob. How do you think Colin Kaepernick reacts in a big game in a road environment in that dome in Atlanta? Obviously, he played great in his first playoff game, but he has had games since he took over the starting job, like against the Rams, where he has struggled a bit. How do you think he comes in and plays against the Atlanta Falcons this weekend?
John, I don't think he will have nearly the impact game that he had against the Packers. Against the Packers, there were two factors in his favor. One, he was at home, and he has been a much better performer at home. And number two is Green Bay's defense. Green Bay's defense has a lot of holes in it. I mean, it is a Swiss cheese defense that gives up a lot of yards, and Kaepernick certainly took advantage of the problems there. You know, Atlanta's defense, they did have problems in the second half against Seattle, but fundamentally, you know, Mike Nolan's the coordinator. That defense improved by a full touchdown. They improved by 6 points in terms of scoring defense over last year. It's a much better, much more sound defense, but they're going to have trouble. And Kaepernick is just that good of a weapon. And, you know, John Abraham's gimpy with that ankle, and I think that'll certainly work in San Francisco's favor. Again, I don't think it'll be as transcendent a performance from Kaepernick, but I think it'll be good enough to beat the Falcons.
Bob, Atlanta was effective against Seattle in terms of running the football, something that had been inconsistent throughout the season, but Michael Turner and Rodgers were, you know, fairly consistent throughout that contest. If they can't run as effectively against a very strong front seven that the Niners present, how confident are you in the Falcons' offense for putting up similar numbers that they did last week?
Well, not quite as confident, John, because I think San Francisco's defense, they got lit up by Seattle a couple weeks ago, so we know that they're vulnerable in certain spots in New England in the second half of their game last month. But I think they're a very stout defense, and I think they will do that. They will force them to pass the ball because it is an excellent, excellent rush defense and, run defense. And I think that front seven may be the best in football. Navarro Bowman is playing great. Patrick Willis obviously playing great for a number of years. Deshaun Goldson, the safety, who I think has been a really terrific player for a couple of years, now coming into his own. So that down the middle of the field, they're very, very good. So I think that, you know, Matt Ryan is going to have to open it up. And I think he'd be smart to just, you know, play open from the start of the game. Don't really, you know, don't do that typical, you know, smash mouth, first and second down, try to run it, don't get anywhere, and then have to pass on third and eight. I think if they try to come out passing, soften up the 49ers defense a little bit, it's probably a little bit better way to go.
Yeah, Bob, I'm with you, and obviously you like the 49ers. I want to jump to the coaches for just a second. Chip Kelly coming to Philadelphia. I guess my basic question is this. How much of his offense is he going to bring from Oregon? How many adjustments is he going to make now that he's on the NFL level? And quite frankly, do you think he's going to stick with one of those two quarterbacks in-house, Foles or Vic, or are they going to try to make a move here and bring somebody else in that maybe Chip Kelly has seen, played against in college before, that thinks fits his offense a little bit better?
Yeah, you know, Nick, he is familiar with Nick Foles, and I think he likes Nick Foles, and I think he's going to go with Nick Foles. I don't think Vic would be the guy. Listen, it's a bit of a, you know, it's obviously an up-tempo offense, and it's an offense that occasionally puts your quarterback at risk. You know, Vic, we've just seen it time and time again now. He puts himself at risk the way he plays, and I don't know that he can be durable enough, and especially at, what, $15 million next year. So I think it'll be Foles and another quarterback that he probably sees in the draft that will, you know, run that up-tempo offense. I think he'll make some adjustments. I think he'll be a little bit less crazy, not crazy, but just not quite as wide open as he was at Oregon, because you can't do it on a consistent basis in the NFL, not against these defenses. But I think you will see absolutely his stamp on that offense. It will be, you know, different. It'll be varied. It'll be multiple, and it'll be pretty exciting. I will say this, though, a cautionary word that, and Pete Carroll mentioned this when I was talking to him a couple weeks ago, when you don't have any experience in the NFL, it's a big culture shock. And Pete can tell you that firsthand, because he was in the NFL. He did have two head coaching jobs before taking the USC job. Obviously knows the college game. Jumped back to the NFL. He said it helped him immeasurably. So Chip Kelly really has his work cut out just getting used to the culture of the NFL, and it's going to be an adjustment for him. There's no question.
Yeah, Bob, that was going to be my next question. How important is it for him to bring in an offensive and defensive coordinator that has NFL experience and has done it on the pro level before to help him with that transition?
Well, John, I think it is important, and I think at least some presence of experience in the NFL on your coaching staff is urgent. Now, you know, it's not impossible, and Chip Kelly's a bright guy, and I'm sure he'll make adjustments, but I just think it'll help him in this transition process if he does have some guys with experience. Again, not impossible, but I think it'll benefit him to have that, and he's going to have to get used to treating guys like men instead of college guys, and there is a difference. When you're a professional, you're treated differently, you're expected to be treated differently, not a sense of entitlement so much as, hey, explain it and get out of the way, and don't continually do it the way you can get away with it in college. So definitely an adjustment, no question.
Talking with Bob Glauber of Newsday, covers the NFL. Bob, there were 8 coaching vacancies heading into the last couple of weeks. All 8 have been filled, and it seems the consistent trend has been to bring in an offensive-minded guy. Outside of the Jaguars, who brought in Seahawks defensive coordinator Gus Bradley, everyone went the direction, you know, of an offensive guy. And I'm curious, why has that been the trend? Why does the league seem to be moving in that direction where there is such an emphasis on the offensive side of the football?
Hey, you noticed, John. 7 out of 8, huh? It is absolutely a trend. And the reason is simple. You know, this is a scoring league now. This is a league where offense is, you know, the name of the game. And now, you got to say, though, that you can do it the other way. You know, Pete Carroll is a defensive-minded head coach. They got to the playoffs. Mike Smith, defensive-minded head coach. Bill Belichick, steeped in defense, he's a 3-time Super Bowl winning coach. So it's not like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, these guys from offense are going to cure everything. But I think that there is the emphasis on that, and you just look at this league now, everything is set up to pass the ball and to score points, and I think that's what owners are looking at to try to make sure that they get the best and brightest offensive minds. Again, you know, 8 coaches, we've seen the firing of a lot of coaches over the years. These guys are not all going to work out. So, you know, maybe Gus Bradley does work out and being a defensive guy. There's nothing wrong with building a great defense, trying to build a decent running game, and he'll have that with Maurice Jones-Drew and, you know, a better defense simply because of his presence in Jacksonville. But, you know, he doesn't have a quarterback right now, so we'll see how that shapes out. But that's what the trend is, but you don't have to – absolutely don't have to be an offensive coach to succeed in this league.
Before we hit you with a couple of Giants questions, Bob, the Dallas Cowboys changed their defensive coordinator this year. Now it sounds like they might be able to bring in Rod Marinelli, who would be a good addition to coach their defensive line. Do you still think there's any chance Jerry Jones makes a move with the head coach. He hasn't named an offensive play caller this year. You saw the Pro Football Talk story the other day in regards to Jason Garrett's brother. Do you still feel like more change might be coming in Dallas, or do you think Garrett is there at this point no matter what next season?
I think Garrett, look, I'll never say no matter what with Jerry Jones.
Fair.
Because you never know what he's going to do. But I think at this point, I think Garrett will be back. It's very late in the game. Unless Jerry Jones has a surprise coach, and we've seen him do it with Barry Switzer, but unless he has a surprise coach, I don't see that happening. Now, mm-hmm. I still think it's open for debate about whether Jason Garrett does give up the play-calling duties. That's really the only sticking point left. But Jerry Jones has kind of wed himself now to Jason Garrett and to Tony Romo, and I think they'll go in that direction. But I do think that he would like to see Jason Garrett get a guy, and North Turner would have been perfect, but obviously not happening, Turner going to Cleveland.
Right.
But that kind of guy who can, you know, take it away. Now, people will say, well, if Jason Garrett doesn't call the plays, you know, what's left for him to do? You know, call the guys to dinner? There really isn't much left to do. But, listen, Jason Garrett's a very principled guy, a very, you know, stubborn guy at times, and believes in what he believes in, and sometimes that will be at odds with Jerry Jones. I think it stays the same. And the only variable would be whether he hires an offensive coordinator, and that's still open to debate.
Well, Bob, as John mentioned, they did bring in a new defensive coordinator, Monty Kiffin, so the Cowboys are probably going to go to a different defensive alignment. Now you have Chip Kelly and RG3 in the NFC East. So from the Giants' perspective, they're going to see a new defense and probably two unconventional offenses throughout four games within the division. Curious, if you're the Giants this offseason, do you make changes based on what your division rivals have done, or do you just go about your normal routine as Jerry Reese and company have followed each and every season?
Well, I think you more or less go with the routine that you go through every year, but with an eye toward what your divisional rivals are doing. So, you know, occasionally a draft pick will stick out at you and say, hey, you know what, this guy is a quick linebacker, maybe you can spy RG3 with this kind of guy. Maybe you can spy whoever is going to be the quarterback for Chip Kelly's offense if he's a more mobile guy than, say, Nick Foles. So I do think you keep an eye toward that. But, you know, Jerry Reese is very he just does it by the book in his mind. He's very organized, and he's very thorough, and I don't think he will deviate that much from his plan, but certainly keeping in mind, you know, what he's got to deal with in terms of the division.
Final question for me, Bob. As the Giants try to improve next year and get over this 9-7 hump they've really been stuck on for two straight seasons, where's their focus with their first-round pick? They don't have a ton of flexibility with the cap. If they try to bring in a big player in free agency, where's the Giants' focus to get better? Is it offensive line? Is it linebacker? Is it secondary? Do you add a pass rusher to replace Osiu Mignure, who probably won't be back? Where do you see the Giants focusing their limited offseason resources to get better?
Yes. No, I mean, listen, you know, the areas that you mentioned are obviously the areas of concern. Now, when you tick them off, go offensive line, Jerry Reese doesn't ordinarily draft a guy, you know, in the first round now, on offensive line, and he's willing to spend some money, you know, i.e. Boss, at the center position a couple years ago.
Right.
Linebacker, generally don't draft a first-round guy unless he's a franchise-caliber guy. You know, if one is there, I doubt he'll be there at that point, but, you know, I think, yes, possibly. Pass rusher, absolutely, if he sees one, because of the O.C. Urmanura situation and because Jerry Reese never has enough pass rushers. And, you know, defensive back, absolutely. You know, that's where you get so many franchise-type players, and especially in these last couple of years, I think you would absolutely consider, and, you know, more likely be a cornerback, and they could certainly use him.
Bob, we appreciate the time this morning. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the games on Sunday.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate
great
it.
Great Bob Glauber from Newsday, one of the best writers that covers the NFL. We'd love to have him on. Does a great job. Love talking to him when he's around here with the Giants. Does an excellent job. We appreciate his time this morning. He gave us some good stuff.
And like Mike Garafola, can't seem to tell us apart.
No, it's funny. Next time we have Garafola on, we'll have to tell him that.
You have to pass that info along to him, even maybe before. It seems to be a continuous trend here on Big Blue Kickoff.
Two guys that grew up in Brooklyn, went to the same college.
Wow.
You know, I guess.
I don't see the similarities there, but, you know.
Well, it's not, you have to hear the similarities, well, not see that this is a radio show, Lance. Do I need to explain the medium to you?
Apparently you do. I'm just baffled and confused that this continues to play out the way it has here on Big Blue Kickoff.
Now, you seem to be a little discouraged and disappointed that you think that people think that you sound like
no,
me. I'm going to take that
don't
as an
read,
insult.
Don't
I'm
read into
lie.
That, my friend.
Ah, well, I do.
I'm just saying, I don't see it. But, you know, other people are allowed their observations. we'll leave it at that.
Well, there you go. Back to our phones?
Absolutely.
201-939-4513. Zach in Connecticut was very patient in waiting through that interview with Bob Glauber. Hopefully we entertained him, and we welcome in Zach to the program now. Zach, good morning.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Love your show.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just had a – it's almost like next to impossible to predict what Jerry Reese is going to do in the draft because he always goes just best player available on the board.
Correct.
And question about offensive line. Now, do you see potential in Brewer, and you think he's going to be a decent player next year?
Well, you know what? I actually had a chance to talk to James Brewer in the locker room yesterday, and we'll get to play back that interview next week on the show. It'll be on Giants.com in a couple of weeks. And he feels like he's at a point now, and he wasn't at the end of last year, and he flat out told me that in the interview, where he thinks he can contribute as a starter next year at guard or tackle. Now, he's more comfortable at tackle. That's a natural position. But he's gotten a lot of work at guard. He feels very comfortable in the offensive system. He doesn't have to think about the calls. It's kind of second nature to him. He thinks he's ready to make an impact next year. I think the Giants will give him an opportunity in the offseason to do just that. I need to see it myself. I want to see him do it against number one guys and real players on defenses, not just in practice. And he made the point, too. He got a little more experience this year against, first-team guys on opposing teams. But I like to see it in game situations in the offseason and in the preseason before I hand him a starting job.
Yeah, because I'd like to see him at guard because I think Booth's a great player, but I think he's a better, rotation player than he is a full-time starter in my
And in the event that Booth leaves, you want somebody that you can fill in that's already familiar with the system. But as John mentioned, I mean, I think that, the opportunity is there for Brewer. It's just a matter of can he take advantage of it and can he prove during this offseason that the coaches should have confidence in giving him that opportunity? Those are two big questions right now.
Yeah. And then now a key to leave from the Patriots, he's a free agent. Cornerback, maybe go after him. Maybe you can get him on a low price.
I can tell you, Aqib Talib is going to look to cash in this offseason.
Yeah.
He's a free agent. Just based on his personality, he's a little wacky. I'm sure he's going to be a guy that's going to go out there and get a lot of money. Quite frankly, the Patriots don't like to give big money contract out to guys, but Talib is still young. I believe he's only 26 or 27. He's still on his rookie contract. If you're going to give a guy a big contract at that age, you give it to a guy that's 26 or 27, not a guy that's 29 or 30, especially a cornerback. So they've had a lot of success with Talib. I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots try to bring him back. He seems to have controlled his eccentricities, for lack of a better word, since he's played under Bill Belichick in New England. I think they'll try to bring him back. And quite frankly, I think he'll probably get more money than he would probably deserve. And I think the Giants' resources would probably be best used elsewhere.
All right. And then I think we should get rid of Travis Beckham. I think that would be a good free up because he's only caught, one pass in his career of New York Giants history?
But it was a big one.
It was a big one, but only one. I think that would be a good spot to free somebody up instead of David Carr or something like that. I heard that a couple.
Well, Beckham's a free agent, so they don't really have to worry about freeing it up.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
He comes off the books if they choose not to bring him back.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Love the show.
All right,
hey, Zach, thanks
so much.
Thanks for calling, man. Great job. The IAT.
When we did that name that
more
play.
Famous IAT. I think we're going
to
bring that back.
We need
next
to bring
week.
That back.
You like
I
that
suggested
idea?
That. Absolutely. I think that we'll play the video on the show so our listeners can see it, and then we'll have them weigh in on naming the play in addition to us.
Now, you're assuming that the people are going to be in front of a screen. Maybe
true.
They can be listening on the Giants mobile app. You just download it on iTunes or, of course, on your Android operating system on your phone, and you can listen to the show on the go on the Giants mobile app as well.
Well, there will be audio, though, on those plays.
Correct.
So they can rely on the description of the play as well, and hopefully that will help them recollect what happened earlier in the season.
Oh,
gotta
really?
Be creative.
Oh, okay. On the mobile app, they can actually see the play as well. But if they're walking around, I don't want people walking around in the street.
Or if they're in their car and they're driving and they're listening
yes,
on the app.
We
clearly,
also
we're not telling
that.
You to stop what you're doing, look at the screen so you can name that play.
So you can see it on the mobile app, but again, we don't want you while you're driving around or walking around in the middle of the street looking at your screen trying to, you know, play. That trouble's going to come out of that. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. We don't want to cause any issues in the morning commute.
Yes. Hands-free device at all times
absolutely.
In the vehicle. 201-939-4513. David Rochester. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. Great show. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate
thanks,
it,
Dave.
My comment was, I think with your guest there, he made a great point about, and I think it's a major concern, especially with Giants fans, that this Chip Kelly has absolutely no experience with the NFL. And first of all, why would a president or an owner want that? And do you think maybe it'd be interesting if he took on a guy with experience, say a Rob Ryan or a Lovie Smith? And then I got to do my Dottino take, so I just want to get your opinion.
Well, I think it is a risky move by the Eagles. I would agree with you. The fact that also college coaches don't have the best track record in the NFL when they make the jump. The key is, and I think Bob Glauber touched on this, who is Chip Kelly going to bring in to round out his staff? And I'm not thinking just an experienced offensive coordinator and experienced defensive coordinator. I also think it's important for him to have a personnel guy, somebody that knows how to orchestrate a roster, knows how to deal with some of the issues that NFL players have compared to what juniors and sophomores have to deal with in classwork and other things that come up during their collegiate career. So it's a different culture that he's certainly going to need to adjust. It's not just a matter of bringing this spread read zone option and having it translate into the NFL. There's a lot of the things and the variables that play out outside of the X's and O's, and that's going to be interesting to see whether or not he can make that adjustment.
And, Dave, the biggest variable is who his quarterback is going to be and how good is that quarterback going to be in his system. We've talked about this before. When these big-time college coaches take these NFL jobs, many times they take over these programs that need serious rebuilding. And it takes these guys a long time to get the programs going. They don't have a lot of patience. They're used to going 10-2, 11-1 every single college football season when 9-3 is a bad year for a team like Oregon, a team like Alabama, a team like Florida. So you go into the NFL, you're winning 4 games. These guys get frustrated. They start yo-yoing their quarterbacks because they don't have a guy that's going to be successful right away, and they fail. So I think it's important to see who Chip Kelly gets as his quarterback, if it's going to be Nick Foles, and how good Foles is. Remember, Nick Saban might have been good in Miami if Cleo Lemon wasn't his quarterback. So those are the things you got to look at.
And it was also an interesting move because is Philly really in the rebuilding efforts at this point?
Chip Kelly's offense is built on speed. LeSean McCoy, Brent Celek, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, Bryce Brown. Darn good.
So does he have a lot of flexibility right now? I mean, they want to win right now, John. They're not in an experimental zone where it's, all right, we'll give you 2 to 3 years. They were 8-8. They were now 4-12, just 12 wins over the last 2 seasons. I think Jeffrey Lurie and company believe this team right now, as it's built with a couple of tweaks, should be able to compete for the division title.
If the Eagles fix their quarterback spot, their offensive line spot on their secondary, there's no reason they can't compete for the division next year, in my opinion.
Well, you remember last year, they were picking them to go to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Many analysts. And then, so maybe you're right. He is coming into a unique situation as opposed to other ones. But definitely a good point of a college coach coming in with no experience.
Absolutely. Well, so what do you got on Dottino? This is what I want to get to.
Well, I didn't call in yesterday, but I did hear the show, and you said that he's not answering your tweets. I was wondering if he got back to you yet.
No, he has not. He has been unresponsive on Twitter, and supposedly, John, he's been unresponsive to your emails.
He actually emailed me back late last night.
All right, so now we're going to defend him here.
But I'm just giving you the facts.
All right, you want to go there, go there.
Dottino is tweeting as the show is going on, by the way.
What else is new?
So he
is running to at the same time
right now. I'm not sure about that. No, I believe he's actually
got the Nikes on.
I think he's on the road doing some NEC college basketball this weekend. Northeast Conference.
Oh, wow.
I think he's in St. Francis of Pennsylvania.
I'm thinking, since it took him so long to get back to you, he needs to, when he comes on to the show, you should have him come in the studio, wherever you guys are at, and he needs to wear his, like, pantsuit, the one he goes walking in. It's probably, like, terry cloth with, like, a lot of zippers on it. And we could just make fun of him.
Well, you know what? The plan right now, and I have not got confirmation from Mr. Dottino yet, I hope to have Paul join us next Tuesday. If not next Tuesday, it should be One other day next week, as Lance and I try to roll in some guests. Howard Cross will join us next week as well. He'll talk some Giants, talk some Super Bowl. So I imagine Dottino's workout gear is just covered in Giants patches, like old logos, the Super Bowl logos.
And pins.
Yeah, pins too.
Yes, absolutely.
That's how I picture it.
Polyester.
Yeah, a little bit. Thank you, Dave.
All right, Dave.
All right, guys.
Appreciate it. Dave is slowly becoming Lance's favorite caller.
Yes.
I could tell. He lights up every time Dave in Rochester. You know, Vinny in Pennsylvania doesn't call enough. He's still number one on Lance's list.
Dave's filling the void.
Dave is catching up quickly.
I will never turn down a dig at Paul Dottino. Come on. You know me better than that. And please, Giants fans should know me better than that.
Please tell me next week I'm not going to have to break up some type of verbal spat between you two. Please.
Don't ask me. You need to ask Dottino. You need to have a conversation with him off the airwaves and assess his mental state before he's ready to put on the microphone.
Well,
that's what I would like to say.
Assess his mental state. Paul's out of his mind. We all know that.
And, so then, what are you
Paul
asking me?
That. But you have to adjust.
You already answered the question.
You know what you're getting into with him, right?
I know.
Now, Mike,
it's the off season now. He's had a couple of weeks. Maybe he's got his head on straight.
By the way, my computer's down, so I don't have our picks, our records, and everything. I believe I'm four games over 500, and I think you're three games under. It's something like that. I think you're about four games
and
back.
And I closed
the
gap
yes.
Since the Ravens beat the Broncos.
It went from five games to four games last week, I believe, in the standings. We'll have the final standings next week. So we got to pick the AFC and NFC Championship teams this weekend. We actually haven't talked about who either one of us are picking this weekend, but something tells me I think we're going to be the same in the AFC and different in the NFC. So I'll start with the AFC first. I think the Ravens, and I said it earlier, have done this with smoke and mirrors a bit the last few weeks with their defense. Obviously, last week they got a lot of help with those deep throws. The Broncos' defensive backfield, to me, was more at fault than the Ravens should get credit for those plays. I think they were just defended terribly. I think the Patriots do enough despite Gronkowski's injury. And I thought Bob Glauber's answer was interesting in terms of Gronkowski, where he thinks it's going to affect them more than a lot of people think. And you can throw me in that category as well. So I still like the Patriots in this game. But if you want to talk about Vegas, I don't think they're going to win by 9.5. I think it'll be a closer game than that. I think the Ravens will be in this contest. They'll run the ball fairly well on that Patriots defense. I think the Ravens keep it close, but I think the Patriots probably win this game 31-24.
I like the Patriots in a close one as well. To me, special teams is actually going to determine the outcome of this contest. Keep in mind, Baltimore gave up two special teams touchdowns to the Broncos last week.
And Jacoby Jones for Baltimore is a very good kick returner as well.
And New England gave up a big return to Manning of the Texans last week.
Good
point. Weren't able to capitalize that to settle for an early field goal. And to me, that really dictated the tone of that contest moving forward.
Yeah.
So I think whichever team gets a critical special teams play could really give themselves the edge. The one thing I do like with respect to the Ravens this season, John, compared to last year, they have a tremendous amount of confidence in their kicking game. And that was not apparent with Billy Cundiff. This rookie, Justin Tucker, the undrafted kid,
has
come in.
Great last year, though, until that miss. Didn't he lead the NFL in field goal percentage last year, Cundiff, before he had that big miss in the AFC Championship game? He was very, very good. Not great over 50, but he was very good 50 and under.
But he also doesn't necessarily have a great career resume.
Fair.
Prior to that stellar season. So was that an anomaly or was that just something out of the clear blue sky? I don't know yet if the jury's still out on that one, but I think that the Ravens feel very good about what Justin Tucker has done. He's come in and he's had multiple big kicks. Also, he had the game winner, remember, against the Patriots back in week three. These teams met in the regular season. So to me, special teams certainly the difference. At the end of the day, the reason I'm not confident in Baltimore, I don't know if they're going to be able to put up 38 points in back-to-back weeks. That's what they're going to need to knock off the Patriots.
No question about it. Let's go to the NFC. So I think you're going Ravens or Patriots? Where are you
I'm
going to
go Patriots.
You're going Patriots. So both of us like the Patriots to win. Do you think the Patriots, do you think they win by 10 or more?
No, I think they win by 5 or less.
Okay, perfect. I agree. So both of us on the same page in that game. This is the game I think we're going to differ. The Niners and the Falcons. Everybody and their grandmother loves the 49ers this week. They think Kaepernick's going to build on his huge performance last week. They think the 49ers are going to dominate, and the Falcons, since they blew that big second-half lead last week, is going to struggle. Well, remember, the Falcons are the same team that built a 27-0 lead on the Seattle Seahawks last week. They didn't just blow that lead. They also built it, which means they're pretty darn good. And Seattle took it to the 49ers towards the end of the regular season. Granted, that game was in Seattle, but still, they played very well against San Francisco, beat them late in the year. Falcons beat them last week. And I think, much like I mentioned to Bob and Glauber agreed with me, much different for Colin Kaepernick winning a playoff game at home as opposed to going to Atlanta and winning a game there in a dome against a very good defense in the Falcons who know what they're doing. They have veterans. I know Abraham's banged up, and that
hurts
them.
That's a big, big loss, potentially.
And I agree. And honestly, my worry in this game, to me, I think the Falcons are going to win. That's going to be my pick. Here's how the Falcons lose, and it's very plausible that they do. I think this is going to be a field goal game. If the 49ers offensive line goes out there and completely dominates this game from start to finish and they rush the ball for 200-plus yards, which I think is a possibility, the Falcons lose this football game. If the Falcons can figure out a way to slow down that 49ers running game, I think they'll be okay. But that 49er offensive line, they're big, they're powerful, they're strong. To me, that's their biggest weapon this week. That's how the 49ers win this game. Not with Colin Kaepernick, but by running the football. And that's my worry from a Falcons perspective.
Well, if that's the case, then I think it's going to be critical for the Falcons secondary, specifically those two safeties, William Moore and Thomas Dekut, to step up and be extremely physical on these running backs. I'm concerned about Abraham's injury. Remember, he only played 15 snaps last week. And who would you rely on, John, to contain Colin Kaepernick and prevent him from going out of the pocket? It would be partially one of your top defensive ends. If he's not fully healthy, that gives Kaepernick an edge to maybe do some damage on the ground. And Cam Newton, Russell Wilson had absolute field days against this Falcons run defense. If they can't stop the run, they got to worry about the running backs and they got to worry about Kaepernick. That's why I like San Francisco in this contest.
Yeah, I don't think Russell Wilson really killed, in my opinion,
second
the Falcons
half,
with their legs.
He had a lot of big runs, though,
to me, he threw it more than he ran it. And run defense against quarterbacks, that's about containment. And the way the Falcons play their defense. With Asante Samuel, they play a lot of zone. They don't play a ton of man-to-man. When you play zone defense, that'll help you slowing down that quarterback scramble because you're looking in the backfield to make those plays. And I like that veteran Falcons secondary against Kaepernick. I think Dante Robinson, I think Asante Samuel create some turnovers in this game, taking some chances. I think Moore and Dekut, who have both have been great this year, maybe the best safety tandem in the league, along with Goldston and help me out, second safety for 49ers. The Dante Whitner for the 49ers.
They also have two good corners, too.
Exactly. I think those are two of the best safety tandems in the league. So I think that'll be interesting. What the Falcons do need to do to win this game, though, Lance, they need to have big games out of their two wide receivers. If Julio Jones and Roddy White each or combined don't make at least two big plays, and by big plays, I mean 30-plus, 40-plus plays in this game. If you don't get two of those plays between the two of them over the course of this game, Falcons are going to have trouble winning.
Well, what about Tony Gonzalez? You can make the argument the Niners linebackers, I think, match up well with him. If they take Tony Gonzalez out of the game, who's Matt Ryan go to from a security blanket perspective?
I don't care how good your linebackers are, and you're right. Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis are better equipped than probably any other inside linebacker tandem in the league in terms of covering a tight end. I'll still take Tony Gonzalez in that matchup.
Well, I think that we differ, which is good, because then maybe I can gain some ground, but eventually I'm going to lose this battle.
Well,
there's only one more contest left, so I mean, all hope is over.
And we're not picking the Pro Bowl.
No, we are not. And by the way, a quick side note with respect to the Falcons, just bringing it back to the Giants' perspective, because a lot of the fans are concerned about the secondary for the Giants and how there were so many injuries and they didn't necessarily have another corner that they could turn to with Aaron Ross leaving for free agency and Prince Amukamara and Jaron Hosley battling injuries. Look at how well Atlanta adjusted. The Falcons, remember, lost Brent Grimes,
the number one corner.
And they posted the best record in the NFC. So it just goes to show you, if you prepare accordingly with respect to your depth chart, and I'm not making excuses here for the Giants because I think they did that in training camp, as we touched on earlier on the show. Unfortunately, the injuries interrupted that plan. You can prepare yourself in the event that you do lose one of your top playmakers and you have somebody that knows the system, can fill in, and you can still keep that level of production at a high note. The Falcons, the perfect example of that. Unfortunately, the Giants weren't able to mimic that game plan.
All right, I'm going to Atlanta in a close one.
And I'm going to go San Francisco in a close one.
All right, so you think we're going to have two good games on Sunday? I think we are, too, to be honest with you. I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
And there's also the storylines in terms of perhaps a Harbaugh Super Bowl.
Yeah, please. No.
I know you don't want to hear about that for 2 weeks. I can tell how excited you are about that.
Please. Please, no. I don't want to hear about that for 2 weeks.
Well, then you're
either. My prediction is that we're going to have another Harbaugh-less Super Bowl. I think we're having Patriots and Falcons.
Well, that's going to be a great offensive clinic if those two teams match up.
That'll be a fun game.
Yeah.
That will be a fun
game. In New Orleans in a dome. I like that game.
Matt Ryan versus Tom Brady. Very similar personalities, though, too. You know, kind of very cool, calm, collected. They kind of, you know, very stoic.
And perhaps Tony Gonzalez calling it a career with a Super Bowl victory.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Remember, it's
You're
not
right.
just Ray Lewis right. ending his career. Gonzalez, too.
And you could argue that, you know, you could probably make a better argument that Tony Gonzalez might be the best tight end in NFL history. And that might be a better argument than Ray Lewis is the best middle linebacker. You could argue both, but I think Tony Gonzalez might be a better argument. You know, we'll have another conversation in a few years when the likes of, you know, Jason Witten and Gronkowski and those guys retire. We can, you know.
Towards the latter stages of their career.
We can talk about this again, whether it's Tony Gonzalez, never exactly what you would call a top blocker. You know, very much a wide receiver, not so much of a blocker.
But
so
that
not
also
quite the complete tight end.
The teams called for that, though, that right. he played for. Kansas City looked at him as one of their top weapons because they never really had an elite wide receiver.
By the way, Michael Eisen reporting on Giants.com. Chris Knee will play in the Pro Bowl, putting off hip surgery till after that game, and he'll be back for the Giants next season, no problem. So there you go. We talked about the coaches. By the way, we should make a very special announcement, a point at the end of the show. This is Dave Melroy's
right.
final program, taking your calls and screening them and you know, doing all these other things, getting us our news nuggets over the course of the show. He ran our fantasy competition this year, did an excellent job doing that, keeping
the charts
track of the
were
dollar,
phenomenal
dollar values each week, getting out the matchups each week, keeping track of it. Did an excellent job running that. And he was more than happy to take my bribes each week so I would finish in first place, which is exactly what
now
happened.
Now we're connecting the dots.
Right, exactly.
There's
well,
clarity.
Yeah, no question.
So happy for that.
Melroy, you did an excellent job. Thank you very much. Yeoman's work, and he'll be moving on to bigger and better things. And we thank him for all his hard work over the course of the last couple of years. Thank you very much, Dave. That's Dave Melroy. We appreciate his work all show long. Mortensen will be doing this as we move forward. We'll have to try to train him a little bit. Get him into the show a little bit. I feel like sometimes he's disconnected from what's going on when he's in here. We're going to have to try to get him more locked
in. Well, he's got big shoes
happening.
To fill. You know, Dave Melroy's our regular guy. He's just as part of the show as everybody else who hosts. So, you know, Brian's going to have to step up his game, just like the depth chart in the NFL.
One guy goes down, the next one has to step up.
So now that it's the offseason and you have a little bit more time on your hands, perhaps, you know, after the shows each morning, you could take it upon yourself to give Brian a little pep talk and, you know, get him in the mood for the job that he's going to have to fulfill.
Well, Captain upcoming. Negativity, Lance Meadows.
I'm not being Captain Negativity here. I'm just saying it's better. You're suited better than me since I am Captain Negativity. So, I mean, you just answered once again my question.
Do you need a little pep talk?
No, I think right now I'm feeling pretty good.
Are you feeling good?
For the weekend, though, I'm going to have to mentally prepare myself for potentially a Dottino sighting next week.
Now, you are traveling tonight, right?
That's right. I am heading upstate.
Very good. Where upstate?
I'm going to Ithaca.
Ithaca.
Yes.
Beautiful Ithaca.
Yeah. Got a basketball game this weekend.
Did you ever see the movie Road Trip?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
There won't be a yellow school bus, though, that will be taking me over. So, unfortunately, you won't be hearing about those escapades.
You can
on
say
Monday.
A little Tom Green, the
Perhaps,
snake,
yes.
things like that.
Yes, we won't be visiting any dormitories, at least that I know of.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
So I guess Lance won't have that much fun over the weekend.
No, it's purely business at this time. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe Monday I'll have some interesting story to share.
I hope to have some good news and good stories from Lance over
yes,
the course
we,
of the weekend.
Yes, we do for many reasons.
Yes. All right, Lance, enjoy the games on Sunday. We appreciate it.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Enjoy your football over the weekend, everybody. We're off on Monday, by the way. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so we will not be here on Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday with Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com from 9:30 to 10:30. We'll be joined, I think, by Paul Dottino. We'll also talk about the games over the weekend and any other news in the NFL. Lance, enjoy your weekend. Everybody, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Have a good one.